Chapter 13 of On the Duties of the Clergy, Book the First. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. On the Duties of the Clergy, by St. Ambrose, Book the First, Chapter 13. The ideas of those philosophers are refuted who deny to God the care of the whole world, or of any of its parts. But let us return to our point, lest we seem to have lost sight of the break we made in answering the ideas of those who, seeing some wicked men, rich, joyous, full of honours, and powerful, whilst many upright men are in want and are weak, suppose, therefore, that God either cares nothing about us, which is what the Epicureans say, or that he is ignorant of men's actions, as the wicked say, or that, if he knows all things, he is an unjust judge in allowing the good to be in want and the wicked to have abundance. But it did not seem out of place to make a digression to meet an idea of this kind, and to contrast it with the feelings of those very persons whom they consider happy, for they think themselves wretched. I suppose they would believe themselves more readily than us. After this digression, I consider it an easy matter to refute the rest. Above all, the declaration of those who think that God has no care whatever for the world. For instance, Aristotle declares that his providence extends only to the moon. But what workman is there who gives no care to his work, who would forsake and abandon what he believes himself to have produced? If it is derogatory to rule, is it not more so to have created? Though there is no wrong involved in not creating anything, it is surely the height of cruelty not to care for what one has created. But if some deny God to be the Creator, and so count themselves amongst the beasts and irrational creatures, what shall we say of those who condemn themselves to such indignity? They themselves declare that God pervades all things, that all depend upon his power, that his might and majesty penetrate all the elements, lands, heaven, and seas. Yet they think it derogatory to him to enter into man's spirit, which is the noblest thing he has given us, and to be there with the full knowledge of the divine majesty. But philosophers who are held to be reasonable laugh at the teacher of these ideas as besotted and licentious. But what shall I say of Aristotle's idea? He thinks that God is satisfied with his own narrow bounds and lives within the prescribed limits of his kingdom. This, however, is also what the poet's tales tell us, for they relate that the world is divided between three gods, so that it has fallen to the lot of one to restrain and rule heaven, to another the sea, and to a third the lower regions. They have also to take care not to stir up war one with the other by allowing thoughts and cares about the belongings of others to take hold of them. In the same way, Aristotle also declares that God has no care for the earth, and he has none for the sea or the lower regions. How is it that these philosophers shut out of their ranks the poets whose footsteps they follow? End of chapter 13, Book the First.